Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
All right, so yesterday was a really weird day. A really weird day. And an even more bizarre night in Major League Baseball. I'm starting with some baseball. Let me lay this out, too. You had the Nationals capping off an amazing turnaround. They went from 19-31 at one point this season to wrapping up a postseason spot and officially putting Bryce Harper and the Phillies to sleep while playing Bryce Harper and the Phillies. I mean, how good must that have felt to the Nats? Almost as good as Max Scherzer, breaking out the special goggles with two different lenses to match his eyes during the celebration. I bet that felt pretty good. Pretty weird, but pretty good. It's got to feel great. But not as great as a shirtless and beer-soaked Brian Dozier twerking in the clubhouse good. I'm going to say there's nothing that feels as good as how Brian Dozier was feeling yesterday. In fact, I'm not sure anybody has celebrated a wild card as hard as the Nats celebrated theirs. Just be sure you go twice as hard in the event that you win that wild card game and run that thing back, but go even harder. So that was pretty amusing. You know, not weird, but amusing. Now, here's where things did get weird. The Yankees and the Rays combined to use 20 pitchers as Tampa Bay wins in 12 innings. The Cardinals and Diamondbacks combined for 24 pitchers and 48 strikeouts as St. Louis won in 19 innings. Arizona used 30 players. The game lasted 6 hours and 53 minutes. And you know what's even more weird? You know what's even weirder than that? 24 pitchers was not the most that were used in a game last night. The Giants and the Rockies combined to use a major league record 25 pitchers in a game the Colorado won 8-5 in 16. There were 8 home runs, 35 strikeouts, and a combined batting average of 180. Holy crap. Now that's weird. That's weird and terrible. And anybody who stayed to the end deserves a prize. Because 5.5 hours of guys striking out with the occasional bomb is not a good time. In fact, it's pretty much the worst time. That was so bad, that was almost impressive. That was so bad, I almost respect it. But not nearly as much as I respect this. Not nearly as impressive as this. Not nearly as impressive as one Jose Ramirez. No, correction. Jose Enrique Ramirez. Because after what he did for Cleveland last night, he's getting the full government right here. Now, he fractured his hamate bone on August 24th. That injury is no joke now, especially for a hitter. And especially when you see the pic of his hand after the surgery. Check this out if you're watching on CBS Sports Network. His palm had more stitches in it than a baseball. It looked like something out of a horror film. Or if you're watching on CBS Sports Network, don't check it out. Look for it online. That's an injury. I mean, it looks like a baseball. This dude's hand looks like a baseball with the stitching. That's an injury that takes a while to recover from. And even then, you've got to start a rehab assignment. Typically, it takes 5 to 7 weeks before you're back, if you're lucky. But this guy was back 1 month after. Before the game, he told reporters, quote, "I don't feel 100%, end quote. This dude's tough now. He's a warrior, and he was going to get out there and do whatever he could to help his team get a spot in that wild card spot or race. Again, keep in mind, when you have that kind of procedure on your hand, and if you see his hand, you know exactly what I'm speaking of, it can really jack with your swing. It can throw off everything you do at the plate. Guys say that they're still feeling the injury months after that surgery. So what happens? Ramirez comes up in the first. Base is loaded. Hitting left-handed. You could probably guess what happened next.
And the 3-1 offering. A swing and a drive to deep right field. Away, back and gone. How about that welcome back? A grand slam down the right field line. The little man with a big bat has come back to spark the Indians with a grand slam here in the first.
Indians Radio, my man coming right out of his shoes. Come back from surgery on your hand. Get to the plate in your first at bat, late in September, in a pennant race, and absolutely crush a ball for a grand slam to get things started. I mean, that's unreal. That's like the stuff of movies. And it would be great if it ended right there. If that ends right there, that's one of the best stories of the year. But it didn't end right there because Ramirez comes back in the third inning, this time from the opposite side of the plate.
Now he bats right-handed, and he drives it to deep left. Are you kidding? Way out of here! Two-thirds of the way up the bleachers in left center. Jose Ramirez, two swings of the bat, seven RBIs.
Two at-bats, two bombs, one from each side of the plate, seven RBI. A grand slam and then a three-runner in the first three innings as the guy's coming back from surgery. And those were not cheap dongs either. Neither one of those was a wall scraper. Man, they were launched. Moonshots. They power Cleveland to an 11-0 beatdown over Chicago. My man, Terry Francona, who has seen everything, literally everything, was practically speechless after seeing what he saw last night.
So I take it that's just what you expect from Jose.
That's unbelievable.
I mean, that is unbelievable and completely ridiculous and totally absurd. Once again, you come back 4 weeks to the day after your last game and you hit a grand slam in your first at bat. Then you chase that with a three-run bomb 2 innings later on the other side of the plate. Man, that is tough as hell. That is impressive as hell. The other games last night were weird, but that was just flat out awesome. How awesome? Awesome enough that I'm leading this show by talking regular season baseball in the middle of the NFL season. That awesome. If I'm leading with baseball in September, either something really weird or something totally incredible must have happened last night, and it did. Jose Enrique Ramirez, if you need him. We're 1 week out from the AL wildcard race, or I should say game, and something tells me there are teams you would rather run into instead of the Indians in this thing. Ramirez, Santana, Lindor, Puig at the plate. UCSB icon, Shane Bieber, Mike Clevinger heading up that rotation. The ultimate skip, Tito Francona calling the shots. That is not a team you want to run into in the postseason. Enjoy that. Man, I love this time of year. Love this time of year. Seamheads, get in here. It is your time. Cleveland, how y'all living? You got America's team. You got a strong ass Indians push going on. Life good, C-Town.
Are you kidding?
Life good, C-Town. I'm asking you, get in here. 1-800-636-8686. The only thing more bizarre than me leading the show this time of year with baseball is I have another monster block of baseball in the National League as well.
How about that? Welcome back.
Jonathan Taylor is my guest. Jonathan, it's great to have you on. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing pretty well today. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. Great to visit with you. So I know you're focused on Northwestern, but if you could, can you take me back to before the Michigan game? There was a lot of hype about Michigan and the buildup to that game. I'm curious, what was the mood and the mentality of you guys in the locker room before you ran out there?
We really wanted to just start off Big Ten play the right way. We wanted to start off fast and make sure that we got a jump and making sure that, you know, playing this type of competition, the Big Ten Conference is really tough, that we came out and played a really good game.
All right, so you scored on a one-yard run to cap off a 12-play drive that opened up that game. And then later in the first quarter, after the defense forced a punt, you had the ball on the 28-yard line. You rip off a 70-yard TD run. Can you take me through the play? What did you see?
One of the biggest things was pressing the blocks, making sure that I'm doing what I can and being patient in order for my linemen to have enough time to get to the next level so I can make that cut to the outside, drawing those defenders inside, allowing my guys to latch on to them, and then I'm able to make that cut outside.
We're talking to Jonathan Taylor, a Wisconsin running back. Now, you've been a part of some really big wins in your time at Wisconsin, but where does that one rank in terms of facing a ranked team, knowing how badly they want to beat you guys to make a statement, and still you dominate that game and at one point had a 35-0 lead? So where do you rank that win?
I rank that win pretty high, especially just because the fans were so electric. It's always electric when you're playing Camp Randall, but it was just a different feel for that game. The fans were roaring the entire game.
One out of four batteries will fail this winter, so you want to get yours tested for free during Superstar Battery Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. If it needs to be replaced, O'Reilly has the Superstar Battery for you. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Jonathan Taylor is my guest. You know, when I mentioned sending a statement, linebacker Zach Bond said after the game, quote, after the first two games, I feel like the world didn't want to say that we were the best defense in the country. They said we didn't have the best running back in the country, and we didn't have the best O-line in the country, and we really made an effort to make a statement this game, end quote. So do you feel like you guys proved that you do have the best defense, you do have the best offensive line, and that you are the best running back in the country?
I feel like it's a great start. One of the biggest things to call yourself the best is to be able to be consistent. So for us to do that throughout the entire season, that's our goal. That's one of the biggest things. We played really well, offense, defense, special teams through these first three games. But the biggest thing is that we want to be able to play well throughout the entirety of the season.
You know, very clearly, you're taking this all in stride and your humility comes through. But after the game, Jonathan, you were getting love on Twitter from the likes of Saquon Barkley, also Wisconsin legends like J.J. Watt and Melvin Gordon. Earlier in the season, Patrick Mahomes was hyping you. What's it like to get that kind of respect from guys of that magnitude?
It's an honor. It's an honor to have those guys mention you. Those guys, they played very well. They were tremendous players at the collegiate level, and then they went to the next level in the NFL and made a statement and became a top player in the NFL. So to have those guys mention you, it's a complete honor, and it just pushes you, and it's more motivation to keep going.
Yeah, how about when you play that position at that school? For instance, I mentioned Melvin Gordon. Last year I was there for the Rutgers game, and I saw Ron Dayne. When you're a running back at Wisconsin, you're going to go into that running back room, and you're going to see photos of all the greats who came before you. I'm curious, what's that like? I mean, is that inspiring, and do you feel like you've got a responsibility to carry on that tradition?
It really is a responsibility playing this position at this school. And one of the biggest things, it's like a fraternity. So the guys, once you meet them, they're always helping you out, the likes of Ron Dayne, Melvin Gordon. Anytime I met those guys, they always tell me to reach out if I have any questions. So it's really like a fraternity, and you have great mentors to look after you.
Wisconsin running back Jonathan Taylor is my guest, and you're also always quick to make sure that your offensive line gets love and respect. What's it like to run behind that group, and what makes that group so special?
I think one thing that makes that group so special is really how smart they are. I remember my freshman year when I first came in, and Coach Rudy, our offensive line coach and OC, he was asking the linemen if they saw the safety rotation. So that was the first time I ever heard a coach ask an offensive lineman if he was looking at the safety. So just knowing that Coach Rudy is coaching those guys up to be some of the smartest players on the field, that's when I really knew that this group was special.
Now, one of the things you've been working on, I know, in becoming a complete back means, well, actually a number of things, receiving, picking up the blitz. Who have you studied as you've worked on becoming a receiver, and what have you learned from those sessions?
One of the biggest things is I try to look at the guys who are doing really well. So I was fortunate enough to go to an awards my freshman year, and I was able to meet Saquon Barkley and those guys who were doing that in the third down realm really well, and asking those guys questions and picking their brains on how did they elevate their game in that way. So just being able to study guys who are in your same position, who are excelling at that, and then being able to incorporate that in your game.
Listen, you're not going to make it about you, but you do lead the country in touchdowns. Your name is being mentioned for the Heisman Trophy. I know you're more about the team, but what's it like when you hear people talking about you as a Heisman candidate?
I mean, it's definitely an honor, especially when you look at the guys who are playing. I mean, you have guys who are playing outstanding right now. So to be mentioned amongst the best of the elite, I mean, it's truly an honor, and you use that as motivation in order to keep going and pushing, because you know at the end of the day, you really want to do the best you can to help your team win games, but that's just another incentive.
We're talking to Jonathan Taylor, Wisconsin running back. You know, if you and I were to go back, when you were growing up in Salem, New Jersey, the story goes that Wisconsin was interested, but his running backs coach John Settle said, quote, we liked him, didn't love him, so to speak, end quote. One of the things he wanted to see was more breakaway speed, so you started to get more and more focused on your track workouts. How did you go about approaching that?
One of the biggest things is putting good football on tape. In high school, you know, you have a tendency, some players, to take plays off. You're usually one of the more talented guys and usually bigger than everyone else, so you would kind of take plays off, and then you quickly transition once you get to this level that every single play you have to make sure you're giving it 100% because there's talent all across the board. So really in high school, that was the biggest thing, is making sure I was consistent, not taking plays off, giving 100% effort every single play. Because like I said, once I matured my senior year and really understood at the next level, you're going to have to give it 100% every single play.
All right, so you did. Your senior year, you did mature, and you start to break off enormous runs, and then they offer you a scholarship. What was that moment like?
I was kind of honored at the moment just because of the prestige of this school and at this position, for them to want to offer me a scholarship, to think, hey, this guy may have something, and we think that he could be something here. You know, he could play a role here. It was really an honor. So it kind of elevated me to another level as far as my work ethic, just knowing that these guys, they have a trained eye. They know that when they see something, they usually have a good edge on it. I mean, they saw Melvin Gordon, they saw Monty Ball and all those guys. So just understanding that I had to continue to work.
All right, so to me this sounds like you're really, really mindful, and you are, because you do a lot of work in terms of mindfulness, breathing, yoga. How did you first get into all of that, and how much does that help on the field?
Really, to get into yoga, Danny Davis took me along to a session, and this past summer, the mindfulness was brought to us towards the end of my freshman year with our strength and conditioning staff, and I feel like those two things really come hand in hand, especially the yoga as far as explosive movement, being able to bend my hips and get in and out of cuts, and then the mindfulness as far as being able to relax, understand that, you know, all you're thinking is before the play. You don't want to think once the ball snaps. You want to go out there and cut it loose. So just being able to focus up before the play, control my breathing, and then go out there and have fun.
Jonathan Taylor is my guest. One last thought. So, Jonathan, our son enrolled at Wisconsin a few weeks back. He's a freshman. You've been there a couple of years now. What kind of things should my son be looking forward to as a Badger?
He should definitely be looking forward to Mifflin. He should be looking forward to Sunroom Cafe, getting the French toast with strawberries and bananas. Old Fashioned, that's another great restaurant for brunch and lunch. Those are three things I think he should definitely be looking forward to. And the snowball fight on the Battle of Bascom. When it starts snowing out, they usually do that.
My man, I love it. I love the intel. I appreciate the intel. I will be there on Parents' Day. Jonathan Taylor, my guest. Jonathan, really nice to have you on the show. I know you got an impacted schedule. Thanks for making time for us, and really good to get caught up. Appreciate that so much.
Thank you for having me on.
One thing that was amazing and some things that were weird. As long as we're talking about weird, let's talk Dallas Cowboy football. Dallas Cowboys may have been America's team until Cleveland ripped that title. But under Jerry Jones, the Cowboys are still America's weirdest team. Weird typically is good. You know, like this weird moment from Dak Prescott in Sunday's game against the Dolphins. He and the offense are huddled up. He calls the play, and then he sees something that catches his attention. Listen.
Skip the flank right stack, 32 Sam, alert X foot. Oh, spicy nuggets are back. I might have to stop on the way home.
All right, now, if I didn't know any better, Alvin, re-rack that. If I didn't know any better, I would say that was one of the most obvious and clumsiest product placements ever. Dak Prescott just did a live read for a fast food chain in the middle of a game while huddled up.
Skip the flank right stack, 32 Sam, alert X foot. Oh, spicy nuggets are back. I might have to stop on the way home.
Good for Dak. I hope the Dak cashes in big on that, in money and spicy nugs. Like, if that were an actual commercial, like if that was shown during a commercial break in a game and was an actual commercial, that would be the corniest thing ever. Our food is so good, the quarterback is thinking about it during the game. Our food is so spicy, he can't get his mind off it. Be like the corniest thing ever. Except, that's not about how good that food is. No, that's not what that's about. That's about how terrible the opponent is. I mean, you want to talk about getting dissed or some disrespect. How big of a slap in the face is that to the Dolphins? How are you feeling if you're Miami and you see that? If you're a Dolphin defender, if you're one of the 11 guys on the field and you hear Dak Prescott saying in the huddle, hey man, I got to get me some of those spicy nugs. Like the most disrespectful thing ever. If you're the Dolphins, like you already know how bad you are. All you have to do is look around at all the moves that have been made, who's left in that locker room, how the first few games have gone. and you know you're a bad football team. You know how bad it is. But then you see this, and now this. Now you have to see an opposing quarterback making a fast food order during the game. Man, I'm surprised that Dak stopped right there. I'm surprised he didn't call Uber Eats right from the huddle. Yo, Witten, how many burgers you want, Wit? Zach Martin, I'm going to put you down for 5 in a Frosty. No, Tony Pollard, you cannot order a sausage, egg, and Swiss croissant. They stopped serving breakfast at 10:30. How many times do I have to go over this with you? Dudes, man, be quiet. Shut up. Listen, for the last time, I am not doing individual orders on fries. We're sharing them. Just tell me who wants fries. I'll figure out how many to order. Oh, and might as well just run this play and probably score a touchdown against these losers so we can get our nugs. Don't get me wrong. It's not exactly Joe Montana pointing out John Candy in the stands to relax everybody. That's Dak Prescott making a fast food order because they know they don't need to pay attention because they're playing the Dolphins. But that was not the only odd moment from that game. There was also that moment where defensive end Robert Quinn finally got in for his first sack as a Cowboy, and he broke out his so-called giddy-up dance.
Pressure coming from Quinn, and he gets to him. Robert Quinn in his Cowboys debut. He's been getting close. Now he gets home for the sack.
Giddy-up, horse face.
Now, we can debate the quality of that dance and whether or not it's a little on the nose to do a Cowboy dance while you're a member of the Cowboys. But there was one guy who loved it. Nobody loved it more than team owner Jerry Jones. He told a local radio station that he absolutely loved Quinn's dance.
Well, that's one of the best I've seen riding that pony. Now, you know what's fun? Sometimes Zeke will do something like that. He'll put a towel on or he'll put some shorts on or something and head down through the middle of the dressing room kind of spanking himself as he emulates the riding the horse. But and that's before a game, so you can see what a asset he is on and off the field to the Dallas Cowboys.
My thanks, sincere thanks to 105.3 The Fan. I really can't thank you enough for that. Did you hear what Jera just said? Jera, again, rambling on incoherently and getting super cringy with it, like he always does. In the event that you missed any of that, what he said was, quote, "You know what's fun is sometimes Zeke will do something like that. He'll put a towel on or put some shorts on and head down through the middle of the dressing room, kind of spanking himself as he emulates riding a horse. And that's before a game. So you can see what an asset he is on and off the field for the Dallas Cowboys." End of quote. What? Jera, did you think about any of that? Any of those words before they came out your mouth? Do you ever think about anything anymore before you pry open that pie hole to let that diarrhea flow from your hole? I mean, I don't know what that question was, but what did Ezekiel Elliott have to do with any of that? And why are you telling us that sometimes, quote, he'll put a towel on or some shorts on and head down through the middle of the dressing room kind of spanking himself as he emulates riding a horse? It's not a shock that Jerry Jones would say something weird or odd or awkward or all of the above. I mean, at this point, it's kind of like his brand. Actually, no, it's definitely his brand. You know, sometimes they're like little phrases or colloquialisms that don't come out right. Other times, like this time, they're thoughts that should never leave his head. And how about him capping off that story about Ezekiel Elliott spanking himself as he rides the horse? How about him capping off that story with, quote, "So you can see what an asset he is on and off the field for the Dallas Cowboys." Why? He's an asset because he goes down the middle of the locker room riding an imaginary horse while spanking himself. That makes him an asset on and off the field.
Asset he is.
For the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, sure, those 1,000-yard seasons are great. His ability to catch the ball out of the backfield, tremendous. The fact that he makes that offense go and it runs through him and it's as explosive as it is, that's all great. But what truly makes Ezekiel Elliott special is the fact that sometimes he'll put on a towel or some shorts and dance through the locker room spanking himself on a
spanking
fake horse.
Himself as he emulates the riding the horse.
Like, oh, man, if that's not a reason to put that man in our ring of honor, I don't know what is. Like Emmitt. Emmitt Smith's an all-time great and all. Emmitt could do a lot of things, but even Emmitt couldn't wrap up in a towel, giddy up, and spank himself. Well, then my man Zeke. Am I right, Steven?
Spanking himself.
You're right, Pops. You're right about that, Pops. Hey, no clones. I'm not asking for your thoughts on this. I already know your thoughts on this. I already know what you're going to do with Jarrah's special phrasing of what Elliott does to himself as he emulates riding a horse. This here is not an interactive topic. This is not a two-way topic. This is not where I give you my thoughts and then you react. This is a one-way topic. I give you my thoughts, and that's that. My thought is, the Dallas is no longer America's team. They're just America's weirdest team with America's weirdest owner. Getting all cringy with it. Again, and talking about his Pro Bowl running back galloping through the locker room on a fake horse spanking himself. That's weird. That's my thought. Do what you want with it. Just don't call, don't tweet, don't email, don't react. I am shutting this topic down. Shutting it down and telling y'all, let's go home. Keep moving. Are you craving some protein after a good workout? Do not make a shake. Do not eat a bar. Grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Why Old Trapper? Because Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty and tender, made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a wood fire. Old Trapper is a family-owned business that takes smoked beef very seriously, and you can taste it in every single bite. I mean, who wants dried, tough beef in a bag? Nobody. It's like eating a shoe. Old Trapper is the real deal, and it comes in four amazing flavors. Old Fashioned is sweetened with a touch of brown sugar goodness, teriyaki, peppered, and hot and spicy for those of you who like to take things up a notch. Next time you want a great protein and energy snack that you can have anytime, anywhere, grab some Old Trapper beef jerky. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. That way you can see the quality that you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. Clones, if you do not see it, ask for it by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? We are joined by Eli Drinkwitz. Eli, nice to have you on. How are you?
Man, great. That introduction, that song got me fired up, man. It's, to be on your radio show is a huge honor.
Eli, I appreciate you saying that.
I appreciate you having me on.
It's really not all that. Believe me when I tell you that, but it's great to have you on. I think you got a great story, and I'm anxious to talk to you. So you're coming off that win over North Carolina in their place on Saturday. You guys block a game-tying field goal on the last play. What kind of emotions were you feeling on that last play?
Man, just excitement and nervousness. You know, App State, since we've joined Division I, has been very close before. You know, they'd been very close to Tennessee, very close at Wake Forest, very close with Penn State, but hadn't been able to get over that hump. And, you know, to have it so close and then have the opportunity to tie it up, well, I was just hoping we had enough left in the tank to finish the job. And when Akeem Davis, with just a little bit of extra effort and energy, put his hand up and blocked it, man, it was an exciting thing for not just me, but for the entire alumni base and fans. Just to have that investment, you know, they've invested energy, time, money, and to have it come to fruition, man, it was a special moment for sure.
Eli Drinkwitz joining us for talking App State football. I loved your reaction, though, afterwards, that as big a win as that was, you were very clear that that was not an upset. That was about setting the expectation. So what was the message to your players before the game to make sure that they knew that they belonged on that field and that they were going to win?
Well, I just knew going into the game, when you're a team going in to play North Carolina, a lot of people want to treat it as an underdog story, and we got to play above our heads. I thought we had a good football team. And I knew we weren't playing the logo. We weren't playing the millions of dollars of facilities. We were playing 11 people on the field, and I thought our 11 were pretty good. And so what I didn't want our guys to do was press, and I didn't want them to try to put on a Superman cape. I just needed them to do their job and play to the best of their ability. And so what I told them is, hey, let's just set the expectation of being 1-0, and it's hope versus expect. If we expect to win, if we expect to play well, then we'll be determined to accomplish that. If we hope it, then we're hoping that somebody else screws up. And let's not hope on somebody else. Let's expect to win. And that was the message for the entire week. And
defense came right back. They got points on the next drive. How important a statement was that?
Well, I think it was huge. You know, I knew when they scored, our guys would be a little bit nervous. But I'd been in those games before where the game speed and just all the emotion of it, you just aren't quite right there at kick. And so after that first touchdown, I just felt like if the offense would settle down, and I thought we had some pretty good openers that would keep them off balance. And when we went right back down and kicked that field goal, I knew we would settle in. Defense went out there, went 3-and-out. We scored again, then defense forced a turnover. And at that point, we had all the momentum and just kept capitalizing on it.
App State football coach Eli Drinkwitz is my guest. You mentioned the defense. Defensive end Demetrius Taylor had a huge game, 2.5 sacks, 2 forced fumbles, a 20-yard fumble return for a TD, and a 19-yard pick set up another TD. So what did you make of the way he showed up on the big stage?
I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a defensive performance as dominant as the way he played. I mean, they got to be seeing him in their nightmares right now. The only thing I can compare it to is in 2010, Nick Fairley against Alabama knocked out McElroy, had a strict sack fumble, and he was a dominant player in that game. But Demetrius, to have, you know, the sack fumble return for a touchdown, the interception return. The other thing he did, not many people see this, but in the second quarter, they drove 15 play drive, and there was a guy wide open in the end zone, and he tips the pass down at the line of scrimmage that would have been an easy touchdown. Instead, they end up kicking a field goal there. That's a 4-point swing. We end up winning the game by 3. So he impacted the game in a bunch of different ways. And he's a young man who last year just played about 15, 20 plays a game, and now he's really coming into his own. And we're excited about his growth. But like I told him, let's not be Milli Vanilli. All right? Let's not be a one-hit wonder. Let's continue to be better each game. And this game calls for him to be a different type of player. And so that's what we're trying to be now.
Let's not be Milli Vanilli. We're talking to Appalachian State football. Eli Drinkwitz, my guest. Yesterday was Toughness Tuesday. Take me through that. What is involved in Toughness Tuesday?
Well, Tuesdays are the most important day of the week because you got to get your weights, you got to get your class schedule, you got to install all the different stuff, and you got to hit, be physical. And so it's just Toughness Tuesday. It's what it is. There's no way around it. You can't talk yourself through it. You can't walk through it. You got to go out there and be tough. And that's the thing about toughness. The only way to get tougher is to put yourself in tough situations and overcome it. And so we call it Toughness Tuesday. You got to be up at 6. You got to get to the weight room. You got to go to class in the morning. You got to be here at 1:30 for your meetings, and you got to go out and dominate a 22-period practice. And for us to do that the way we need to do that, you got to be tough. And so we just call it what it is. And again, it's about setting the expectation and meeting the expectation. And so, hey, it's Toughness Tuesday, and let's set the expectation. Let's go meet it.
I like it. So when you look at it as a head coach, how much of success in that game is about physical toughness, and how much of it is about mental toughness?
I think they're right there both. They're one and the same. I mean, mental toughness is also having the ability to put your body in those physical toughness situations. I mean, we were cramping up in the third and fourth quarter, and, you know, our young guys had to go in and be mentally tough and not let the stage be too big for them. But then our older guys had to come back and say, hey, I'm pushing through this, and I'm going to keep fighting, and I'm going to keep playing. And, I mean, Akeem Davis played all but 3 plays in the game and blocked the kick on the final kick. And, you know, that's 88 plays. So that's both mental and physical toughness. And to me, in the game of football, that's the number one characteristic of a great football player is his toughness, both physical and mental toughness.
Eli Drinkwitz joining me for a few more moments. You know, if you go back to that notion of expectations, when you were in school at Arkansas Tech, the plan was for you to become a lawyer. So what was your relationship with football like at that point? And then what made you change from a future as a lawyer to the future as a head football coach?
Well, you know, I was an undersized player and what wasn't good enough to play college football. I mean, I'm just going to call it like it is. And so my relationship was that my high school coach thought I'd be a good coach. And at that point, I was a little bit mad at the game. And so I said, no, I'm going to go to college and be a lawyer. And then I started doing intramural football, and I started loving it again, and got back into, you know, at that point, I was like, I'm going to be a high school football coach, and got the head job, head seventh grade job in 2005. And the minds of men plan the ways, but the Lord directs their steps, and went on to coach at high school in Springdale. And Coach Gus Malzahn gave me an opportunity to go to Auburn as a QC in 2010. And that really started my career. But, you know, whenever I decided to coach football, my mindset was I was going to go be a high school football coach. And I kind of had a five-year plan. I was going to be a junior high coach and then a high school coach and then a coordinator and then a head coach. And the Lord just worked it out for me to be coaching college football. And it's been a wild ride, but so far so good.
Amazing. Let me ask you about one more thing about that process, because you get the opportunity to join the staff at Auburn, and then you go to Arkansas State. And when you're there, you're working with my guy, Brian Harsin. The story goes that at one point he asked you, what were your goals? You kind of touched on that briefly, but what was your response to him when he posed that question to you?
You know, he asked me, it was right after he had hired me, and he said, what are your goals? And I kind of was just kind of stunned, because it was always just to be a head high school coach, and I didn't really have it. And he challenged me, just, hey, write your goals down and go get them. And at that point, I decided, you know, I'm in college football, and I belong here, and I can coach at this level. And so then I wrote down my goals of wanting to be a coordinator and a head football coach. And I'm very much indebted to Brian for, one, him giving me a chance at Arkansas State, two, giving me a chance at Boise State, and three, just encouraging me to grow as a person, not only as a football coach, because he helped me do that tremendously, but also as a person. And Brian was a big impact in my life and in my career.
All right, so let me finally ask you this, because I'm getting a kick out of talking App State football here. It would seem like you're running ahead of schedule in terms of being a head coach as young as you are, but it's also clear that you've got a really strong vision as to how you want this program to run and how you want your players to play. So what do you want people to think when they think of App State football?
Well, it's really easy for us, pride, passion, and purpose. We want them to see, when they see us play, we want them to see us play with passion, with extreme effort and toughness, with a purpose that we're playing for each other and for this university, and with a pride, a personal responsibility, and daily excellence. And so, you know, when they see those three, when they see us play, we want to see those three characteristics come about. And it's one of those deals where we're always competing to be better than it's ever been done before. The thing about App State is it's been great for a long time. And the challenge for me was, how do we take it to the next level? And what are the things that we can do? What is the vision that I can sell to these guys to make them keep fighting, keep investing? And for me, it was just to always compete to do it better than it's been done before. You know, they've been so close to beating a Power 5 program that they hadn't done it. And for us to do it Saturday gave us credence and credibility to the message that we've been preaching, which is, you got to play every single day with passion. You got to have a purpose for your life, not just in football, but also in life. And you got to have a personal responsibility and daily excellence in order to achieve it. You know, passion without a purpose is a nightmare. But if you don't have a pride, a personal responsibility, everybody has dreams like, oh, I'm gonna have a purpose out there. But you have to do something every single day to accomplish that. And in order to do that, in my opinion, you have to be a competitor. You have to always compete. And we got to be better today than we were yesterday. We got to be better tomorrow than we were today. And our goal is to be better Saturday than we were last Saturday. And if we don't do that, we're going to come up short. And so that's kind of our vision for the program, and that's what we're selling these kids. And the thing is, this team's bought into that. You know, it's one thing to sell it. It's another team for guys to buy it. And these guys have bought it, and we got a heck of a challenge in front of us this Saturday, and we're excited to take it on. I know that.
And you can see why App State is out quickly, 3-0. They're coming off a win over North Carolina, 34-31, but don't call that an upset. Next challenge is against Coastal Carolina, Saturday, 3:30 p.m. Eastern. The head football coach at App State is Eli Drinkwitz. Eli, that was a blast. Great to have you on the show. Thank you very much. Let's make sure we do that again soon.
Yeah, don't be a stranger. Call me back.
Let's go back to the guy who is going to put all you clones on notice. A first-timer. Stepped out of the box. Held his bat up. Pointed to the bleachers to call his shot. Derek in North Carolina. Derek, what's going on?
What's up, Jimbo? First time, long time.
What you got, man? What's on your mind?
So I want to start by saying that I've been listening to you periodically for literally my entire life, but I started really getting into the show about a year and a half ago. I've listened to all these idiot clones with no life and no money make their attempts at funny jokes on air. And since then, I've realized how low they all are. My grades have never been higher. One of my teachers took notice and asked me what I've changed in my life. I let her listen to one of Rick and Buffalo's calls and told her he's a teacher. 3 months later, she was back in college for a higher degree. Your show inspires lives for the better, Jim. My sports take here is, where the hell is the hockey talk? We've had an arms race here in the Metro, and you old Canadians, Tyler and Matt, haven't made a peep. Why is that, you ask? Well, Matt's team suffers from identity crisis, and their best player is a five-year-old whose head is smaller than the puck itself. Good old Shredbinton, though, has no excuse. You guys have Connor effing McJesus, and you're telling me that you can't even give him the time of day to get a goalie? Edmonton in the playoffs is like Mark in Hollywood naming his child Wolverines in the playoffs, because he'd never witnessed those words actually put together in a serious respect before. Jim, I don't think I'll be a frequent flyer on this show because, well, I have a life to live.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call. Derek, my man, like go right ahead and live that life. Start right now. And he grounds back to the pitcher. I wait for the first baseman to get over there. I underhand him the ball. One out. Once again, somebody talking a huge game and not showing up. Well, what was that? Besides a bad call, what was that? My man, next time, send me your email and I will read it myself. And you will do better. 1-800-636. It's harder than it looks, isn't it? It is harder than it looks. This is why. I mean, credit for calling. Credit for putting yourself out there. Credit for taking that shot. I'm always going to respect somebody who takes the shot. I respect that more than the guy saying, I can do that, I can do that, and then you're never trying. Because it does take a certain amount of grit and a certain amount of gumption to put yourself out there, because there are like 8 zillion people listening. And if it doesn't go well, you're going to take some. Like, that guy's going to take some. But you got to take your shot. You have to get comfortable being uncomfortable. I was uncomfortable listening to that. But you got to take your shot. Barry Zito is going to be my guest on episode 97 of the Jim Rome podcast. That's coming up later on today. I found a guest for episode 100. I'm going to call off the dogs on that one. I have our guest for Ep 100 of the Jim Rome podcast. But this is episode 97, Barry Zito. Long been one of my favorites. It'll be good to get caught up with him once again. Look for that a little bit later on. When we come back, Fred Warner, a linebacker for the 49ers, will be joining us. If you can do better than that last caller, and the bar is not that high, go ahead and give it a shot. Because he was going to change the game. To hear him say it, he was going to change the game. He was going to revolutionize calling this program. Fred Warner. Fred, great to have you on. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you. So you beat the Steelers on Sunday 24-20 in a game, Fred, that might not have been the prettiest win ever, but you found a way to win even when the offense wasn't playing at its best. So let me start right there. What's it say about the team that you found a way to get it done on a day where things didn't necessarily always go your way?
Right. I feel like, wins like that where they're tight and, things probably aren't going in our favor, that says a lot about our team and, how resilient we are. We knew every single time we went out there that we had the game, even though we might have been down. Our defense and even the offense were confident the entire game.
So the defense had a big day. The offense turned the ball over 5 times, but as you said, quote, we never flinched. From a defensive standpoint, how have you gone about developing that attitude and that approach as a unit?
Yeah, I mean, I think our defense coordinator said a long time ago, he mentioned Murphy's Law to us, which means, anything bad that'll happen, can happen, will happen. So that's kind of the mindset that we've had, and we're just going to keep continue having moving forward.
Obviously, Fred, as a team, you're going to play together. So the defense continues to make plays, and then with just over a minute left, Jimmy Garoppolo throws the game-winning TD pass. What was your reaction to that play?
Oh, man, that was huge, obviously. After that, I think we knew that we had it. Because going in that 2-minute drill with probably just a minute left for their offense, the way that the crowd was screaming their head off and making it loud for that quarterback, it was huge.
Fred Warner is my guest. Speaking of the crowd, I mean, you start the season off with a couple of wins on the road. Then you come back home for the home opener. Man, how did that feel to show up like that in front of the home crowd, especially when they were coming on as strong as they were and showing as much love as they did late in the game? What did that feel like?
Oh, it felt great. You know, we had talked about it, me and my teammates, all offseason, trying to go on the road and be 2-0 so we can make it home for the fans with that undefeated record, and then obviously win that first game at home. So it felt great.
And then defensively, through the first three games, the defense already has seven takeaways, which ties the total that the team had all of last year. What's been the biggest difference between last year and this year when it comes to getting to the football and taking it away?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure there's a certain, you know, thing to point out. We talked about it a lot last year, and it just didn't happen to fall our way sometimes. And this year, they're just coming in bunches, and hopefully that continues to be the case as long as we're playing hard and playing fast, trying to get out the quarterback and getting those tips and overthrows.
Fred Warner is my guest. Look, I understand there's a lot of football left, but the team is 3-0 for the first time in more than two decades, and you've won games in different ways. The record may surprise some people outside that locker room. Does it surprise you at all?
No, not at all. I mean, we've been so close. I mean, I've obviously only been on the team for a little over a year, but I mean, I've seen how close-knit this group is since the moment I've got here. And, you know, we've had the pieces. Obviously, last season we had some injuries, but we added a few pieces in the offseason, and now I think we're running with it, and obviously the record's been showing that.
Hey, Fred, I mentioned your stats from last year in the Open. You had a huge rookie season. You're in your second year now in the NFL, but despite having a good year individually, how different does this year feel compared to last year now that you've got that full season under your belt?
Sure. I mean, just having all that experience from last season, in the defense, learning the playbook, knowing the guys around me, this year I feel like I just playing that much faster and that much more confident, just having all that experience from last year.
You know, it seems like, and if you're more confident, it seems like you're going to be more vocal. A lot of the guys going into their second year might still be kind of taking that approach that they're going to let the others do the talking. You seem already really comfortable in a leadership role. Where does that come from?
Yeah, I mean, I think some guys just having some, and some it takes a little bit more time to develop. But honestly, just having that confidence in the guys around me and in myself has really brought that out, you know, in my second year.
Fred Warner, my guest, for a few more moments. So you mentioned the guys around you. Let me give you one guy in particular, Quan Alexander. It seems like you guys have great chemistry together, great partnership at linebacker. What's it been like to play with him so far?
Yeah, I mean, ever since he stepped on the team, he's brought just a different energy to the group, not only on defense, but just to the entire team in general. Having him next to me out there on the field, it gives me that much more confidence because he's a playmaker. He's going to be out there making noise, and he just works his tail off every single day.
I also mentioned off the top that you played your college ball at BYU. I know the level of respect that head coach Kalani Sitake has for you. After the Niners drafted you, he called you, quote, a gem and one of the best players he's ever been around. It's really, really high praise from somebody like that. What was it like for you to play for him?
Yeah, I mean, Kalani, he's such a stand-up guy. You know, he was an outstanding coach while I was there. Obviously, he's been having some success this season, which I've been super happy about. But I have all the respect in the world for that guy. He's for sure a player's coach and cares a lot about his guys.
You know, one more thought about that. The current linebackers there still talk about the influence that you have even to this day over them, the way you inspire them to this day. What's it mean to you to know you've left that kind of legacy there?
I mean, yeah, it means the world because, you know, going to BYU, I knew I wanted to leave my mark, and to hear that I'm still making an impact, even though I've left, you know, it means a lot. So I'm just going to continue to work hard and keep grinding.
Hey, Fred, one last thing. The bye comes early. I mean, you play your schedule, right? That's all you can do. But when you're 3-0 and you're playing as well as you are right now, are you happy to have that bye, or would you rather just keep playing?
You know, in a perfect world, you know, probably just keep going, you know, since we're in this group. But, you know, it came when it came, and so we're just going to take advantage of this time off, get our bodies recovered, and get ready to put our foot on the gas heading into the next part of the season.
October 7th is the next game. Cleveland at San Francisco, a primetime game. He's got 19 tackles and a forced fumble on the season. Fred Warner, my guest. Fred, appreciate that so much. Thank you. Great to have you on.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Having a blast in Wisconsin. Great state. Let's go to Madison. Dan. Good to have you, Dan. How you living?
I'm living well, man. How you doing, Romy?
I'm great. Everything's good.
Hey, man, I just wanted to call and compare resumes. You had talked about how good it is to live in C-Town and everything, but as a fan of Wisco sports, man, I just got to throw a few things out there because it is really good, especially in the month of September, to be a fan in this state right now. I mean, just looking at the numbers, first of all, you just had JT on, who is an absolute stud. As a father, the fact that, you know, I can have my kids look up to a guy like that who's an academic All-American, who's the best runner in the entire country. Like, dude's just amazing. Not only that, but you have a team that's outscored their opponents 145-14 in the first 3 weeks. That's incredible. I get, you know, two of them are warm-up games, but then you get up against Harbaugh's boys and you take it to them the way they did. That was incredible. Going from Madison, you go over to the Brewer Crew in Milwaukee. They won 16 of their last 18 since losing the arguably the best player in the league in Yelich, and now they're about to lock up the wild card after starting the month seven games back of the wild card spot. You go up to Green Bay, where they found a defense and they found special teams. I mean, that's always been an offensively driven team. They're 3-0, and it's all been because of their D. And then, of course, you find out that the Bucks are about to give a supermax to Giannis, to one of the best players in the NBA. Man, it is a good time to be a fan of the sport here. Not to mention, we're also going to get a junior Romy in the state now, so that's pretty amazing.
My man, rack him. Dan, I could not have said that any better than you just did, and they pay me to say things like that. You nailed it. I'm going to parlay Josh being there to Josh's call not being nearly as good as he thinks it is. I wonder what that would pay on an 89-cent bet. 89. What's up, Josh? You're on the air.
What's up, Rome? See? Talk about salesmen. I sure do have persistence, don't I? Because here I am. You finally said yes. You know, Rome, at first I thought it was a national hashtag Kill Michigan Day because you had Wisconsin on. You had Appalachian State's coach on. What's next, Romy? Urban Meyer's Mark D'Antonio. You know, the Michigan's been a dead football team and organization since Jim Harbaugh walked through the door 5 years ago. Oh, hey, Derek and North Carolina, do you have a Sharpie? Because you know what? I might as well have you sign an autograph because this is what a yard call sounds like. Yay! I made it, Rome!
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
I think he just said, hey, Derek, do you have a Sharpie? Because this is what a yard call sounds like.
Good night!